Most companies break when they grow. They lose their edge, their values get diluted, and the culture that made them special can get replaced by chaos. Now, the problem is scaling exposes cracks in communication, clarity, and accountability. So if you don't have a plan to scale your culture as fast as you scale your headcount, the whole thing can fall apart. So in this episode, we'll share exactly how we've kept our team aligned and energized while growing fast at Ferris Capital Partners, and what you can do to preserve your culture, no matter how big your organization gets. Now, the reality is you have to sort of look at the growth culture paradox, right? So growth requires speed, change, and structure. So if you're growing too quickly and you haven't taken the time to put in the right structure, policies, procedures, and what we call golden rules at Ferris Capital Partners, so the things that the company just never deviates from, then that growth, that rapid growth, can start to expose those cracks and start to erode away the culture. Because the reality is culture thrives on clarity, connection, and consistency. So how do you balance that need for growth and change with the ability to also maintain clarity and consistency, right? So if you're scaling without a cultural plan attached to it, you're going to experience cultural drift. In other words, the culture is going to start to fall apart. So it's not about keeping culture small, it's about making it scalable, right? So here's some five principles that we've employed at Ferris Capital Partners to scale without losing culture. So first and foremost, and this is the most important one, in fact, you can kind of forget the other four if you get this one right consistently, and that's hire for values, train for skills. So just kind of jumping ahead a little bit here, at Ferris Capital Partners, we have a multi-step interview process. It's not uncommon for us to have five or six meetings with a candidate through Zoom and in person before we make a job offer. And we let candidates know that right out of the gate. This is not going to be a fast process. We take our time because we are so protective of our culture. Now, part of that process is we actually get behavioral assessments done, and then we review those behavioral assessments in a very detailed way, looking to uncover who this person truly is at rest. And by at rest, I mean when they think like nobody's watching, when they're comfortable, they're in a role that really suits their needs, these are the behaviors that we can expect to see. And so we look for our cultural alignment in that natural behavioral style. So that love for people, that ability to connect, clear communications, the effective openness to change, right? And that ability to be comfortable with change. So all these things are part of our hiring process from the beginning. So we're also screening for things like humility, hunger, alignment about what we're doing. We look at resumes to be very clear, and it's a very important thing. For example, if I see somebody's got a new job every year, you know, I might not even interview that candidate, right? Because we're all looking for loyalty and people who, you know, when they find a good company, have that perseverance to stick with us, even when things get a little challenging. We bring in those ABA behavioral assessments, have that long-term hiring process. And prior to even starting the process, we actually create scorecards. So we're, in effect, ranking candidates as we go through the process and keeping track, keeping score effectively of the things and that value alignment. But what we know and what we've learned is you can't train character. You just simply can't. So if you got somebody who has all the skills but the wrong character, it will ultimately erode and create issues within your culture. So if you get the right people on the bus before worrying where it's going, right? That's what it's all about. So that said, once we bring this person on, we want to codify culture early and reinforce it often. So we defined our core values early and repeat them constantly. Genuine love of people, make wise choices, first-class service, operational excellence, and speed of execution. And then we've taken those values and actually created a set of fundamentals. Right now, we are actually at 38. So those are the behaviors that define those values. And on our daily huddle, we just go in order. So every 38 days, we're starting over from the top. And we just highlight one of those fundamentals. So things like we pick up the phone. So in other words, if we have any news, good or bad, we pick up the phone. We don't deliver that through text or email. We own our wins and losses. Extreme ownership is another one. Once again, there's 38. We could do a whole episode on these fundamentals. But that to me is so important because when a culture starts, or a company, I should say, starts to scale, sometimes people might not always understand what we mean when we say first-class service or what we mean when we say operational excellence. By taking that further step to define those values into actionable behaviors, it just adds clarity. And so, for example, if somebody does something great for the team And I want to highlight that in an email to the team on my Friday email update. I'm going to actually highlight the fundamentals that they were honoring. You know, Georgia Patron did a really great job here. She sought feedback, one of our fundamentals, adjusted our approach, and over-delivered for our clients, another one of our fundamentals, right? So just always calling those things out and tying it back to the values and those fundamentals. And then in the first couple of days a new hire starts, we start with what we call love bomb. So we give them, you know, some company swag, some nice shirts like you see me wearing, some Yeti mugs, and a couple of books related to our industry. But just want to make sure that that day one is awesome, right? It's so amazing to me, but I've heard this story time and time again. Somebody gets a new job, often in a big corporate culture, and they show up on day one, and it's almost like people forgot that they were showing up that day, right? So in other words, there's no business cards, their phone's not set up, their computer's not at their desk, and they're just handed a manual and say, hey, read this, and you know, we'll meet in a couple of days, right? And so when you have that kind of experience as a new hire, you're immediately questioning your decision, right? So making sure that first day, those first couple of weeks are just super solid, super strong. They're meeting with each individual team member in the company, getting to know each other and just getting ingrained immediately. And then remembering that culture really lives in rhythms, language, and leadership done the same and repeated often. So going back to those fundamentals, like Mark and I have to live those every single day because one of ours is show up on time. So if I'm late to a meeting consistently, then the team's going to say, well, now I have permission to also show up late. And so that's where culture starts to erode. So you got to live it every single day. Now, the third thing is building tight meeting rhythms and aligning that with clear reporting, right? So those daily huddles where we're connecting, talking about some good news from the prior day, reporting on our number one metric for the day and what's our top priority, and then reviewing any sort of stucks or challenges that the team may be facing. Some days we don't have any, but you know, somebody might surface something and we might have a little ad hoc meeting to resolve that issue or quickly resolve it in that huddle. But that daily connection is so important. Everybody knows what everybody's working on. We ask that people provide a lot of detail in these updates. So not just something like, had a great conversation with an investor. It would say, you know, met with so-and-so, had an hour-long Zoom meeting. We discussed these three things. This could be a great partner for us. Or our asset manager might report on a new vendor that we just signed an agreement with that helps save us 25% on expenses, but while also delivering higher quality service. So the details really matter here. And what we're also doing is keeping the team very intelligent and informed. So there's no silos, right? Everybody knows what everybody's doing. And then by doing it that way, sometimes it's that idea that, you know, maybe it's our inside salesperson. She's kind of far away in a sense from, say, marketing. I mean, she's aware of what we're running in terms of ads or things of that nature. But because she's frontline with a lot of our initial conversations with potential investors, she can provide feedback back to marketing that marketing may just not see, right, or be privy to because they're not on the phone, right? So that interconnectivity, that problem solving across departments is so critical here. Then we have a weekly meeting. We call it the level 10 meeting where we're digging into issues, quarterly priorities, and deeper metric reviews. So not just the number one metric, but maybe say the top 3 to 5 metrics that each team member has. And that visibility and reporting in a group setting, right? Like nobody wants to be the person to say, I delivered a bagel. You know, in other words, a zero. I didn't hit my goal, right? And so what we do in that is say, for example, somebody does fall a little bit short. We're not beating you up in the meeting. Perhaps that's a conversation we might have on a one-on-one. Hey, what happened here? But what we want them to deliver in the meeting is not an excuse on why they didn't do it. It's more, what am I going to do about it going forward? And how am I going to get caught back up, right? Then we have weekly same page meetings. So every team member reports on a weekly basis to their direct report, where we're going through wins, challenges, priorities, metrics, you know, and how can I help, right, as their leader? What do you need from me? My job, as I see it, is to clear the decks and to remove any obstacles that might get in the way in team success. So we're talking about that. How can I help, right? So bottom line is everybody knows the scores. Those metrics are visible and owned. And as we all know, what gets measured gets improved. And then we celebrate what's working on a repeated basis, right? Now, number four, we want to empower teams, but not micromanage them, right? So create clear outcomes and accountability versus task-by-task control. So, you know, we're more about the end result, not necessarily the steps you took to get there. Now, I will say we have some very detailed systems and processes that we do ask our team to follow that are just proven that work. But that's really about efficiency, right? Because if we develop a system that has fewer steps to get to that end result, that's what we want done. But at the same time, if the team member sees an alternative path that might produce a better result, we want them to do that and then come back to us and deliver, hey, I tried it this way and it actually worked a little bit better. And now we might go adjust our process, right? So these processes and systems, in a sense, are like living and breathing, and we're constantly looking and updating and optimizing. Another fundamental is, you know, we do not get comfortable with the status quo. We question the status quo. So just because we've always done it one way doesn't mean we should always do it that way. If there's a better way, we want to uncover that. And by allowing team members a certain amount of ability to kind of make some decisions and try some new approaches, that's often where we get these incredible new ideas that we can implement across the organization. So we try to push decision-making down, right? Closest to the street, so to speak. So I actually worked with a really exceptional executive coach for a number of years at my prior business. And interestingly enough, he was in the Catholic Church. He was a priest in the Catholic Church for a few years, about 10 years actually, before he decided to step away. Interesting story, right? He ended up in corporate, executive coaching. So just quite a journey, I would say, just to put it mildly. But what he told me is, in the Catholic Church, you know, the people closest to the ground are the ones making the decisions, right? So the bishop isn't just barking down at all the priests, right? It's like what's needed in the local parish, right? And they are allowed to help make those decisions. So that idea of the people closest to the problem are often the best ones to solve it. But we also want to make sure that if they hit a roadblock and they don't know maybe what the next step should be, that they can reach out to me or reach out to the team, surface that is stuck in the huddle, and the team can collaborate and help solve that problem together. So bottom line is, a high trust culture that helps people move fast without needing constant approvals is going to win every time. And then number five, keep communication rational, not just transactional, right? So we celebrate wins. We acknowledge our people when they do something wonderful. We check in personally, not just professionally. Now, at the end of the day, you know, I've experienced this where there are some employees that have worked for me that I knew everything about them, some things I didn't want to know about them. And I say that slightly tongue in cheek, but just they're very wide open, right? And they're just going to tell you everything that's happening in their life. And I'm here for that. If you need my help to talk about something that's going on with your child or your spouse, to the extent that I think I might be able to help, I'm going to offer some advice. Some team members are a little more private, right? But at the end of the day, if I know a little bit about what's going on there personally, and I understand that maybe they're going through something, maybe perhaps a family member is sick, then I'm going to give them a little bit of grace and obviously look for ways that I can help, whether by taking some workload off of them while they're, you know, sort of navigating this personal challenge, or once again, maybe it's providing some resources. And not to say I'm a genius, but maybe it's just a book that I read that may be able to help them, you know, that maybe has helped me in the past with something that maybe I've been going through that's similar. My father died a number of years ago, right? I have a team member that's going through that now. So to the extent that I can help along that way, and that person would like me to do that, I want to be there for that person. So, you know, not just treating our employees as numbers is, I guess, what I'm getting at here. These are people. We're aligned. We're locking arms. We're going to do a lot of business together. And what I learned early in my professional career is, you often spend more time with your coworkers than sometimes you even do with your family, because I'm working all day, but sometimes I don't see my entire family until we're sitting at the dinner table each night at 7 p.m. But my son might have soccer, right? And so it's this idea that, you know, I might be spending a few hours a day with employees where I might only get an hour or two Monday through Friday with my family. So we better like each other, and we better have good ways to communicate and to support each other, right? You know, people don't burn out from hard work, in my experience. They burn out when they feel unseen, unmotivated, or they don't know what the mission of the company is. So let's flip gears a little bit here. So how are we sort of like continuing to evolve, right? So in a sense, culture is never set. We have to steward it at each individual stage. So as we grow, we're creating more documentation, more systems, and more processes. We're also looking for ways to create more pathways for internal growth that have the fewest steps, right? So once again, going back to clearing the decks, but looking to optimize our processes and systems along the way so we can work a little bit less, but deliver even stronger results, right? And then expanding leadership capacity through training and mentorship. So we want each individual team member to effectively be a leader of their organization. I like to think about it as like a leader without a title. Certainly there are some support employees in any company, but you know, they should also be exhibiting leadership. So supporting that and asking for that, you know, stepping up, helping out another coworker in the same department that needs some help, and looking for opportunities there to be that leader without a title. So, you know, the culture that that got you here won't always get you there, right? So you've got to let that culture grow with purpose. So, you know, just some key insights here. You know, at the end of the day, hire for values, not just resume. So make sure that, you know, if you're looking for somebody who's going to be, say, for example, client facing, sort of like maybe a service client support type role, you better hire someone that has a genuine love of people and that's just inherent native to them, because I can't train that. But what I can train is our systems and our step-by-step process. But if they don't have that, then you're going to have a problem, right? If I'm hiring an analyst, then I want somebody who has an analytical brain. I mean, that should go without saying, but by leveraging these behavioral assessments, I can see this person has a natural behavioral tendency where they like, you know, meticulousness, they like quality, they have high sitability. In other words, they can sit in front of a computer and just look at a spreadsheet and be totally happy with that. And not perfectionism, but sort of a desire for perfectionism, right? And sort of what I say not perfectionism is, in my experience, if somebody's too perfectionistic, they'd rather make no decision than the wrong decision. And so aligning each hire with the role and making sure the behavior suits the role that they're going to be in. Creating meetings and systems that don't kill culture, they protect and scale it. So death by meeting is a real thing. We minimize meetings as much as possible, but we do have those key huddles, the level 10 meeting and those same page meetings. And that's like religion to us. We do not deviate from it. And then, of course, finally, people first leadership. That fuels both performance and retention. So a bit of a different topic for us. Typically, we're diving into sort of the mechanics of multifamily investing, but we thought it'd be good to also share some insights into what's helped Mark and I scale successful businesses in the past and what's helping Ferris Capital scale successfully today. So thank you so much for listening to the show. If you've enjoyed the show, please subscribe and share it with other high net worth investors that you think would benefit from it. Thanks for tuning in. We love and believe in you guys. Keep dreaming and investing big.